Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for tonight. We've got a bunch of guys in here. This room is literally packed with guitarists. A little while ago, we had done a show with Jim Stubblefield when his new album had come out, Incantato, and on the phone from Florida, guitarist Eric Hansen. And back then he was talking about his upcoming album, and we're very honored today to have him in studio. He's here from Florida, and also the album's done. It's called Glistening, and we're going to be talking about that album. And just before I play the clip and start everything, I just want to introduce everybody that's here. Besides Eric is Jim Stubblefield, who you all know from Incendio and from his solo work, and he's been on several times as behind the mic as a guest and also as a guest host. And then also, too, we have Dan Sistos, who was on recently with talking about his new album, Ventura Boulevard. And again, he was here as a guest, and he's now, I think this is your first guest host, if I'm correct.
Yeah, it is. Yes. Thank you.
Anyway, so, but what I want to do is I'm going to play a clip from to open up and kind of set the scene. And then also, too, a little bit later, this is one of the pieces that Jim and Eric are doing together, because they're playing a gig here in L.A. together as a duet. But this is one of the clips from his new album, Glistening, but it kind of defines, I think, overall what Eric's about and what he's been doing. So let me play this real quick, and then we'll start right in. This is called Silver Light. Thank you. some great playing. Welcome to California and welcome to the show, Eric. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me. And this is quite the experience to come out and play a gig and be on a radio show live. It's exciting.
Great album, and we're going to talk about some more cuts, but before I get into your background and stuff, since it's fresh in everybody's mind, we were talking before the show about how you guys are adapting this for your gig that's coming up, because this is with a full rhythm section, and now you guys are going to be playing with two solo guitars. And also, too, just mention real quick where you guys are playing. Get all the information if you want to.
Yeah, there's a great venue in Altadena called Coffee Gallery Backstage, and Eric and I are playing there this Thursday night at 8 o'clock, and the show ends at 10, so 8 to 10 this Thursday. Reservations are highly recommended. So just go to coffeegallerybackstage.com and you can call a number there to reserve tickets. I think the shows might be about 70% sold at this point. It's $18 and it should be good.
Yes. Now, what I wanted to talk about real quick, since we just played that clip, is you were talking about how you had to adapt it to sound full, because that's a pretty full sound with that section. And now you're adapting it for the two guitars. So let's talk a little bit about how that evolved. And then also, too, you guys can maybe demonstrate a little bit of the clip.
Well, we can give you a quick example. We'll play one verse, and then we'll play the second verse, and you'll see how we had to change it just to give it a little bit more variation and flavor. So let's play verse one. And
pull back. I'll have you to pull back so it could the mics.
So Jim's going to be strumming chords in the first verse. When we get to the second verse, I'm going to arpeggiate the chord progression instead, just to give it more variety and a little bit more energy to it.
Okay, go ahead.
So right at the beginning of that verse, 2, 3, 4. Okay. And now we'll play the other verse, and you play melody, and I'll play the arpeggiated chord. 2, 3, 4. The way those parts are played, they're not on the album like that.
Right. No, it sounds pretty full. Now, I just want to let everybody know, you heard me pull the vocal mics off. I have two mics set up for them, and the reason I pulled that off is I wanted to get let you hear the guitars through the Audio Technicas, because these guitars sound amazing. And I didn't want as much of the vocal mic, because it gets a lot of the room sound, and it the tone of these guitars are great. But anyway, let's talk a little bit. I mean, because I remember you had mentioned this album before. Give me the background a little bit of, you know, what you were trying to do at the, you know, what where were you going and what we were thinking about in making this album.
Well, like every album, we try to outdo what we did the last time. So I wanted to kind of make the compositions more interesting for myself to play, because I don't want to keep playing the same things over, you know, year after year. So. But also where they're still accessible for people to enjoy. I mean, I could go off crazy with writing weird dissonant stuff, but, you know, it's not that enjoyable for mainstream audience. But where do you make it balance between making it fun and interesting for musicians, but also for a listener who's not going to really get stuff that's going crazy, but can enjoy the music and just take it in, you know?
Right.
So.
Well, I noticed that the album, it goes in, it has a lot of different feels and grooves in it. And it has a, you know, you have your traditional stuff. I think we'll play the clip of Old San Juan, which I consider is more a traditional type of guitar song. But you do some interesting stuff, some jazz. You get a little bit of prog in there, which I'm a big fan of. And I notice also, too, that you have a good, you're able to blend. You use a steel string and classical guitars. And you blend them well, besides melding different styles. And I think all of you guys here, you guys are really good at integrating that. And I think that's to me, is very important in terms of the type of guitar playing now that you guys are doing. A new classical, new type of flamenco thing. You're integrating a lot of other influences that, whether it's rock or jazz or whatever, and you're integrating in that, and I think that makes the music way more exciting. Let me go ahead and play a clip. to let you. Well, I think this is a good stretch. This is called El Galeón, and this has like a to me a Prague jazz feel for it. So, and let me play that clip, and we'll talk a little more. I want to get into one of the things I want everybody to notice when we're playing the music. Is the clarity. He worked really hard to get the mix to sound really clear. And there's a lot of guitars on this album. There's a lot of layers. But what I noticed is it was just really clear. And even when you're doing really fast stuff and counterpunal fast stuff, it hits the mark. And it's, you know, I could hear all the parts. And to me, that's not easy to do. That's something that you have to really work at. So here's El Galeón. So I think you can hear there the changes and a lot of different styles merged and melded together.
Great groove on there, man.
Yeah, very, very, very cool. Let's talk a little bit about what you were using there. Now, there's a gut string, nylon string, and then you also have a steel string in there.
Yes.
So what were you using on that?
For the opening arpeggiated part, it's an old Guild steel string, like a 76 or something like that. Dreadnought body, so it gets a pretty big sound.
Mm-hmm.
And for all the melodic content, I used a Robert Ruck classical guitar, and I also used the Guild on some of the harmonies, and there's mm-hmm. a couple of melodies and on the steel as well. But you know, pretty much those two guitars. The Ruck just gets an incredible, humongous sound for nylon string. It's so easy to mic. You just put the mics in front, and the guitar sounds enormous right from the start.
It's got a really rich character.
Yeah,
to
it's got this beautiful top end to it, and mm-hmm. You know, it cuts through really nice. So.
And that's a cedar top with rosewood? Is that the
yes.
traditional classical? It's
yes.
a traditional classical guitar?
Yeah, and also with classical action, so it wasn't easy to improvise on.
Yeah, I mean, you're going pretty fast on that.
Yeah,
that's a high action.
It was
that's
tough.
That's not easy to do.
And no cutaway. And no cutaway, so...
No.
Yeah, so...
No cutaway means punch-ins.
Yeah. Now, we were talking a little bit when we got together before the show, and I want to talk about this, because about how you mic'd it. Because you were using an older technique that a lot of people haven't really... I've seen it more on, like, pianos. But go ahead and explain what you were doing on there.
Pretty much a standard XY. I just meet the capsules right at each other at a 90-degree angle.
Mm-hmm.
And I end up probably between the neck and the sound hole, or I'm a little bit more towards the sound hole, depending on the tonality I was looking for, you know. But
what kind of mics were they?
Earthworks. I think they're called SR30s now. I have the old model. They were called SR77s, but they just kind of renamed them to fit in with their product line better.
Mm-hmm.
So they're SR30s. It's a match set.
Okay.
And you can get really close to these mics, and they don't get boomy, which are like, 'cause they're really small capsules. So you get that nice upfront sound. So I don't really have good acoustics in my studio. It's set up for mixing. It's not set up to record.
Right.
So I got to get pretty close to the mics to get a nice sound.
So where
you and you had to sum. Then you summed them to mono, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that's interesting.
Right. But you still capture the top end and the body of the guitar better. I would try one mic, but it's too focused on a particular sound of the guitar. Too much mids, too much lows. It's hard to find a sweet spot. And when you're doing everything yourself, you know, I don't want to spend 2 hours recording a passage, take the headphones off, listen to the monitors. So
yeah.
It's been reliable. Yeah, you know.
But I mean, I'm interested that you did it in mono. How did it sound in stereo?
It sounds incredible in stereo. It sounds huge and beautiful, and it's great for when you're playing and you're recording, because I'll monitor in my headphones in stereo. It's just more pleasing.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes time to mix and you have a dense mix, you got to bring it in a little tighter.
Because you were overdubbing so much.
Right.
And then you use the XY pattern also, too, on the guild?
That part went in a lot earlier than the melody did, so I don't remember what I did quite. I might have just used one mic on that because I knew I wasn't going to need a big sound on it. I was going to kind of move it to one side. And so it was either like a Neumann TLM-103 or I did the XY on it. I don't remember exactly. So.
Oh, okay. You know, and then you did you record somewhere else the other parts, the rhythm and the drums, or did you do all of that at your studio too?
Everything was done in the studio.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, the sound is really, really, really clean.
And what was kind of challenging on the song I played on, the first song, my room's the opposite. My room's kind of set up more for recording and not for mixing. So I have hardwood floors, and I have no soundproofing in the room. So I'm giving Eric my tracks, and you were saying there's a little bit more live.
Yeah. Well, I've first noticed that when I played a part on your guitar, on your album, and I heard the first mix, and I said, it sounds like Jim has more reverb on his guitar than mine. And it wasn't. It was just his room.
Your room sound, yeah.
And my room has no dimension to it at all, so... But yeah. But in a dense mix, it's not that big a deal. We did do some recording on duet stuff, and that's a little more challenging because the guitars do sound very different from each other.
Now, you did your parts at your studio, or because I know you went to Florida for a while. Did you record there with him?
No, I recorded. I was really struggling with, you know, how I was going to do it because I knew my room was going to be liver than his, and I have these Shep's mics, and Eric said, you know, you need to try the XY. Miking. I'd never done it before, so I tried it, and I sent him the stuff, and he said, you know what, I think I can work with this, and when I heard he sent me back the stuff, it I mean, completely different rooms.
It blends. I mean, I that first sound, the Silverlight, you're both playing, and it sounds pretty consistent.
It's almost blended so well, you can't really tell apart who's doing what. I kind of wished I had done a better job maybe isolating us.
Because we switch back and forth throughout the song. I mean, there's places I'm playing arpeggios, and then the next verse, I'm playing the melody, the next verse, he's playing the harmony, and, you know, two different rooms, different mics, different guitars, a few thousand miles in between us.
Well, let me play another clip. That this is I cut this. Now, I understand these songs are pretty well developed, and it was difficult because there's so much cool things, and these clips are a little longer than I normally cut, but it's because there's so much evolution in what you're doing.
And I like the long clips.
Yeah. But and this one I actually cut from a middle part in the opening of it. This is the title song, Glistening. But listen to it, the clarity, also your technique playing. I mean, just flawless. All the notes are just right on the money. But also, now that you know what we were talking about with the mic placement, take a listen to this because it really does show what he's talking about. I was really impressed with how clean everything sounded and consistently clean and how it all blended together, because there's a lot of stuff happening in this clip. Here's Glistening. Now that's just, I mean, the
nice
the,
changes, man.
Nice
beautiful
changes. But every note just rings true. But there's a lot of guitars in there. And one of the things I thought was kind of cool is you're doing an octave thing at one point melodically. There are two guitars following. And I think the top one is steel string, right?
The arpeggiated part there, steel string and nylon,
I think,
kind of pan left and right. The melody is all nylon.
All nylon. So the octave, too, it's great. Yeah. I love that little octave thing that he's doing there. It's really cool. And then, of course, all the changes. And then at the end, you do that blum, blum, thing.
I love when you hear music and you don't know where it's going to go. You think it's going to go somewhere, but then you change it. You go somewhere else. That's keeps everybody on their toes.
And this album, again, you're getting a good feel of the different styles that he's incorporating in it. And it makes it really interesting. And the other thing that's really cool is we were talking about this before, I think is really exciting, is that you'll be able to get the sheet music for this. I think this is repertoire that a lot of, especially in schools and stuff, this is great recital stuff. I mean, it's just great music all the way around. But speaking of that, let's talk about your background a little bit. So give me a little bit of a brief thing of where you your musical influences. I know you started playing at 14.
Yep.
And you studied classical and jazz guitar, right?
Correct. Right.
So, go ahead.
But like everybody else, when you're younger, we started with rock. I think you mentioned that.
Absolutely. 14 and rocking.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So, but I kind of was into all the neoclassical stuff in the 80s, 90s, and Rush was a huge influence because it wasn't just power chords. They had a lot of nice seventh chords and ninths and stuff, and it kind of opened my ears. And then from there, I grew,
And then in college, too, was jazz a big influence?
Yeah. I went in for jazz, and my teacher, Michael DeLito, he was playing. He had a classical guitar always in the lesson, and I'd walk into the lesson, and he'd be playing some beautiful classical stuff. And I'm like, I really want to learn this. I love the sound of this stuff. So I started doing both, but towards the last couple of years of studying, I started doing mostly classical.
Okay. Yeah. Well, who were your influences in jazz? And
Pat Metheny, McLaughlin.
Oh, okay. All right.
And as we discussed earlier, like the newest guy, Rittenhour.
Lee Rittenhour. That's very cool. I read in your bio that you study with some people from Spain, and you had studied with that, and also Peru, which I have to throw out there because JP, who's Peruvian, gives you a little bit of craziness. Those guys are great. I love them. They're crazy people, but they're great. And JP, he's a wild man in Incendio. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. You've had a pretty diverse. Well, let me ask you this, though. In Florida, where you live, how's the music scene there? Is it pretty? Is there a lot of stuff happening there or not so much?
It's hard to say. I mean, if you compare it to L.A., you would say not much. But there's enough going on, and there's good musicians. It's just hard to find good stuff live. But if you really want to find some good guys, they're there. I've seen some pretty monstrous players.
I mean, you got like Matheny and Steve Morris. They're all from Florida.
Yeah.
Di Meola, too, right? Isn't he?
He lives in Miami. Yeah. He usually does his writing in that condo down there. And I've actually seen him. He came into a gig I was doing, and he walked up. He just stood there, and I was playing. And I look up, and he's just standing there looking at me, and I didn't realize. I'm like, who's this guy?
Yeah.
And then it hit me. I'm like, oh, my God. I just stopped playing, and I got up and just shook his hand. We talked.
That's great. But he was originally from there.
No, he's from Birkensfield, New Jersey.
Yes, New Jersey. Yeah. But I think he lives there now, right?
He has a summer home, I think, there or something. But he's in Europe all the time.
To be Di Meola, summer homes.
Yeah. And he has a few of Testarossa, I think.
Now, let's play another clip. I'm going to play a clip. This is more traditional to kind of set set it a little bit what you're more known for. This is Old San Juan. So this is and I have to admit that last clip that we played too, what you were playing and you did that on the ruck.
Yeah,
that's pretty amazing. That had to be hard.
It was hard. My hand was sore afterwards.
But here's a little more traditional, and it's a beautiful piece. And again, just the technique and the clarity is just amazing. This is Old San Juan. Thank you. Now, let's talk a little. I know that you used on you used the ruck for the primary thing on the album, but let's talk a little bit what you brought in today, both of you guys, because this is what you're going to be using live for the show. I want to talk about that because we were talking about woods and then also the pickup system, because one of the things when you were on the show with Jim was you had installed his pickup system.
Yeah.
And you do all that, especially the Carlos Juan, which is a great system. So let's talk a little bit about your guitars.
Okay.
So we'll start with you.
Well, for performing, I've been using guitars built by Jorge de Sevilla, which is he's also in South Florida. He's in the Singer Island area. And I met him 3-4 years ago, and he finally built some guitars for me last year. And they're so comfortable. The necks are kind of flat in the back, and they're not too wide, so mm-hmm. it's really nice if you're gigging a lot. It doesn't blow your hand out, and then putting the Carlos system in there has just been a really perfect marriage for gigging on nylon string guitars, because we all know how hard that is to get the sound.
Yeah,
live.
To get that sound.
Yeah.
Now that guitar that you're using, is it a traditional squarish type of classical guitar neck like a Ramirez, or are you using a more of a hybrid, a rounded?
No, it's not rounded. It's actually flat in the back. It's flatter than what you would typically find. Mm-hmm. The width is standard, 52 millimeter at the nut. But the back of the neck is definitely flatter, and it's just more comfortable if you're doing bar chords or just a lot of fast passages.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So you find that easier to use than
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
Because I was curious, playing some jazz, you play electric too, right?
Yeah.
You do that. I mean, I'm just curious if your hand, because I think I had asked that of Dan on his show too, the difference between the feels of the guitar, is that hard to adjust?
Yeah, Dan, is your what's
well,
your
I think after a while you just get used to it. At first I remember thinking I wanted a guitar with the same nut everywhere, so it's just comfortable. But if you play enough of everything, I can go from a 52 millimeter to like a 43 millimeter mm-hmm. electric, and it's fine. It's you just got to play a lot of both. That's really all there is to it.
And Jim too. Your guitars are the traditional shape.
Yeah, I mean, I have a JDZ, Jorge de Sofia, like Eric has, is a Brazilian rosewood one, Florentine, and it's the same normal classical width. I used to have, years ago, I had some nylon strings that had the smaller neck. They were made for guys who want the steel mm-hmm. string width,
yeah.
But I find that it just feels kind of weird.
Yeah.
Because, I mean,
I agree.
And I'm the same as Dan. I mean, if I pick up an electric, like a Tele or a Les Paul or Paul Reed Smith, it doesn't bug me to go between the two.
Isn't that funny? Because you could play like a 43 millimeter electric, it's fine. But if you play like a 50 millimeter nylon string, it feels just awful. It doesn't feel right. It's too skinny.
The strings are thicker, so there's less room between them.
Yeah, especially if you're doing any kind of arpeggiation.
Yeah.
If the strings are too close together, I mean, there's a reason why the nut or the neck is that wide.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. No, but that would be difficult for me. Even for myself playing from classical to electric, the spacing... It was easier to finger pick, yeah, because there's more room in there. But
yeah, I mean, the trick is you really have to have your hand behind the guitar. I mean, you can't do the Eric Clapton grip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thumb over the neck doesn't work so well.
Now, both of you guys are using the Carlos Juan system.
Yes,
and then we've talked about Jim's setup for his pedal board. Are you using a pedal board?
We have pretty similar setups. We're both using the Grace Felix preamp, mm-hmm. which is a two-channel preamp, perfect for a Carlos system, and little digital reverb, and that's it.
That's it. So yeah. Pretty straightforward. Mm-hmm. And do you use the that phase control?
Yeah, I kind of stopped for a little while just because sometimes you just want to simplify the setup, but I was missing it, and I brought it back in, and it just makes dialing in the mid-range so much easier.
Right.
Because just with a quarter turn, all of a sudden the mid-range you get the muddiness out. Kind of scoops it out, and then I just can tailor it with the EQ. So it's pretty helpful.
Are you using the wet reverb as well?
I am.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, Jim and I, what reverb do you use, Eric?
Back home, I use a Lexicon MX-200.
Oh, but for live use?
Yeah, for live.
Oh, you do?
Okay. But I didn't bring it with me here, so I'm borrowing one of Jim's.
Yeah, I'm loaning him a TC Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, too.
That's a good, yeah, that's a great
one. You got to try the wet, though. It's a beautiful reverb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and the... You still have the phase.
I do. In fact, Eric said, can you bring that on Thursday? Because it'll help us dial in the... Because we did a rehearsal day. It sounded great. But I was looking at his phaser, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I still have mine. Because it is. I mean, you can... Like, he put it perfectly. He said, you can get the sound without it. But if you are able to use the phaser, you can dedicate your EQ controls on the Felix for more refined adjustments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I just noticed that when we had demoed it on the show, it was dramatic.
And really the reason to use it is because we're using a dual system. We've got a piezo and a microphone. And you have to get the phase right, or otherwise it sounds really thin. But because it's analog, you can get a very granular... You're not just flipping the phase, 180. You can get a very granular adjustment.
You only need half of a 90-degree shift, you know? So mm-hmm. it's pretty cool.
Now, do you ever use the steel strings live?
I have on occasion. I have my gigs are typically 3 hours long, so I have enough material to do a set or a set and a half with all steel string.
Now, do you use the Guild Live, or what do you use live?
Yeah, use the Guild Live, and it has Carlos' system in it as well.
The same system as the classical?
Mm-hmm.
And now, how is that? Is there a lot of do you have to adjust it differently, or is it
a little
pretty
bit? Yeah, a little bit. So, like at the beginning of the set, I may kind of test it and make, but it's just small changes in the mids, really.
And the Guild, your Guild doesn't have the mic in it. It's just the piezo.
No, it does have a sensor.
Oh, it does have a sensor.
Yeah, it has the mic. Because I noticed, well, I'm listening to the recording. I haven't heard the acoustic guitar live, but you dig into that Guild and it gets a nice little grit to it.
Yeah.
Is that do you have to play differently to, you know, with the piezo? Do you have issues with the piezo when you dig in, or
no,
is it pretty much grabs it?
It actually. I mean, nylon strings are really hard to amplify. I mean, the system sounds even better in a steel string. It's so natural, unbelievable to me. It captures the sound of the guitar very accurately.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I noticed with Jim, you know, when he plays aggressively on his guitar, and that system, a Carlos Juan system, it doesn't. You know, when you pick hard on a lot of piezos, they just get this kind of compressed, clacky type of sound.
Yeah.
And I've seen him just rip. Live on it when he's played with Incendio and stuff, and it just rings true. It sounds acoustic.
Yeah, it is. It's very accurate, and it also will give you the sound of your guitar. Like, you could put the system in five guitars, and they all sound very different, whereas a typical piezo pickup, no matter what guitar it's in, it still sounds the same. It mm-hmm. sounds like kind of a Fishman kind of sound, you know?
Right.
So, and I noticed that all the guitars I put it in, it's very accurate. You know, if the guitar is going to be very bright, well, the sound through the pickup is going to be very bright as mm-hmm. well. Or if it's a dull, muddy guitar, that's how it sounds through the pickup as well. So you have to adjust your EQ.
Is it difficult to put that system in those guitars, or is there...
It's tricky. It has to be done right. It has to be done with a lot of care mm-hmm. because of the routing that takes place where you put the pickup in under the saddle. You have to have a small, narrow channel for this wire to sit in, and it can't be too deep or too shallow because then the saddle's got to sit on top of it, and you're trying to eliminate most of the air around the pickup because that's really where your feedback problems come from.
Oh.
So when there's the least amount of air in there, then you have much, you know, less feedback. You can crank it up. I'm sitting next to my Bose system on my gigs. I could have it at full force, and it really doesn't feedback. Where if there is a feedback issue, it's quickly notched out.
Right.
And you also said that you also glue a piece of carbon fiber underneath the Bose.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's Carlos Juan's kind of signature.
What is that?
Yeah. That kind of adds more clarity to the sound. Also kind of evens out the transmission to the pickup mm-hmm. because it's a very consistent material. But it gives you top end clarity, especially with the pick. You hear the pick hitting the string a little bit nicer. It's not as harsh. And but on my guitar for this show we're doing on Thursday, I'm actually using a completely carbon fiber saddle because this guitar has a little bit more low end to it, and I like to kind of tailor that off a little bit. And so the carbon fiber, a full carbon fiber saddle, doesn't transmit as much lows.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of attenuates it, and I get a nice, much more even sound through the pickup.
Mm-hmm. Now, we were talking a little bit before. You guys were mentioning about some of the problems that you saw with the pickups and trying to play live where the balance of the strings. You were talking about some of the strings are dead, especially...
Dan, you want to talk?
Yeah, that's the problem I've always had with every under-the-saddle pickup is that it's solely based on a pressure on the saddle. And the minute you have a string that's pulling a little bit more pressure, now your string balance is off. So Eric was saying you got to really, you know, have no air in that saddle so that you know, you can really work with the saddle and just apply the proper pressure to get the even string balance. And one thing, I don't know if this is with your guys' systems, but I've noticed that you can set up a guitar with a regular under the saddle pickup, and if you change strings, if you change brands, if you change anything about your strings, now your setup is completely off. Is that the same with the Carlos? Do you have to reconfigure it?
The tone will change, of course.
But like will your balance stay the same?
Balance stays the same.
Oh, that's
but
great.
I had that happen with, I'm not going to mention any pickups, but I've had it happen with the pickups that I've owned, where even pickups that were really good, I switched out like the, not even the gauge, just brand, like normal tension.
Sure,
and I switched the brand. And maybe if the D string was a little stiffer on the previous brand, the downward pressure wasn't enough. And
that's
I noticed
right.
a dB drop.
It throws it all off.
Now, how besides the keeping the preventing as little, you know, as little air between the in that space, what else can you do? How do you balance something like a guitar like that? If there's if it's liver in the middle strings as opposed to the other, what would you do?
Well, I've had to resort to a couple of little tricks on a couple of guitars where say the third string's a little hotter because it typically
yeah.
is. I've taken the saddle out and put just one single stripe or maybe two stripes of super glue on the back of the saddle where that string is. And it just makes it a little snugger in the slot in that one spot, and it just tends to reduce the output of that string.
And I have a story behind that because I had taken my guitar on traveling with Incendio, and there were some weather changes, humidity changes. And what happened was I think the guitar got a little dry, and so the wood shrank a little around the bridge. And I brought it to Eric, and he added some. It was my other guitar, I think, and he added some super glue inside the saddle, just against the side, to mm-hmm. thicken the wall of the saddle up. Immediately, the string balance got perfect yep. again.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, and with steel string guitars, like if somebody uses the traditional steel string is a wound G string, but a lot of guys I've been hearing now use a plain G string to bend more and.
Yep.
McLaughlin did back in Shakti days.
So right, but Indian. I mean, how would you affect, because that's obviously from going from a plain string to from a wound string, that's going to change the balance of the guitar.
Yeah, I haven't been faced with that challenge yet. All the steel strings I've installed on, they've been using a wound string on. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, no one's changed after the installation.
So. Okay, and then are this as far as the steel string guitars, they're pretty balanced, or have you had issues?
No, there's issues from time to time. But believe it or not, I mean, you could put a saddle in there and let's say the sixth string is a little weaker than the rest or somewhere in the middle there's a weakness or it's too strong. I'll take the saddle out and I'm not kidding, a couple of just wipes on a sandpaper. I don't know what it's taking off, a micron. But just that little bit less of friction in the saddle, all of a sudden it works.
Right.
Right. And I've also gone too far where now it's leaning too much and I've lost it and I've got to start over. So.
Now, with the Carlos Swan pickup, you were talking about this guitar. You specifically were using a carbon fiber bridge. What do you find? What works well with the Carlos Juan? I mean, I know that was for a specific, but like with Jim's guitar, did you have to use a different bridge? Did you put a new bridge in, or did you just use the old bridge?
I had to do a brand new bridge because I had pulled out a RMC system, so I had to fill all the holes from the hexaphonic system, fill the slot, and reroute the slot, and then we put a traditional bone saddle in. But underneath the bone saddle is, let's say, about a 1 millimeter thick strip of carbon fiber on the bottom of the saddle, which helps even out the transmission and give a little more clarity.
Oh, okay. So, but you're using a real bone, or is it plastic? It's a bone.
No, it's bone.
It's bone.
Yeah. I mean, this guitar has a bone saddle, and in the bottom, if I was to take it out, you'd see a thin, perfect strip of carbon fiber about 1/10 the width of the rest of the saddle, just the bottom.
How hard is it to take that saddle out? Is it, like, super snug in there?
No, it
pops
can't
out?
Be. It has to be loose, otherwise it'll be all out of whack with the balance.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's not a lot of daylight in there either.
Yeah.
It's an art form.
What do you use, Dan, on your bridges? Are they bone or do you?
I'm using all RMC pickups. So my systems are all RMC.
RMC.
Yeah.
So, okay. Because that's interesting. The that system is just but that trick of putting the carbon fiber that's very
and I mean Dan gets a great sound with the RMC, he does.
Yeah, I like it.
But we're gonna have a meeting and we're gonna
they're trying to sway me over here into the Carlos land.
Well, the sound of
I'm very
pickups,
interested.
I know those, but I mean it's if you get a chance to play his system with through a PA, I mean it's the most natural. I mean, I'm not just saying that, but it's the most natural sounding system.
Well, it's a newer system, correct? It's only been around not too long, right?
I'm not really sure when it came in, but yeah, I would say it's definitely newer.
RMC is a kind of outdated technology these days. You know, it's been around.
Unless you're using like a synth and you need it.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Well, JP uses a synth system with it and it works really well.
Yeah, I mean, he has to. And he gets a great sound. He's been using a Red Eye DI from from an Austin maker, and it's really warm to sound up. It just sounds beautiful.
Yeah. No, it's an amazing sound. I want to play another thing that's another song from the album that mixes, that shows disintegration of the steel string and the classical. This is called Entanglement. And take a listen to this, and we'll talk a little more about that.
Before you go, I'll just give you one more thing. On this song, there's steel string on one side and nylon on the other. The steel string guitar is a combination of the Carlos pickup and mics.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
When you're installing pickups, you have the fortunate opportunity to play a lot of different guitars. So this guy dropped off a nice Martin 35th anniversary or something, and I just done an adjustment on it, and it was sitting there, and I'm like, I got to redo the part on this tune. I'm going to do it with this guitar. And I plugged in the pickup and put the mics in the XY, and I blended them. But the pickup just gave it a little more presence and some top end, and it really works well.
So that's the Martin. Oh, that's cool. Okay, let's take a listen and see. Listen to this. This is great. Now, was that a Martin, like a Rosewood's? I'm pretty much spruce, but I mean, was that like a Rosewood?
Yeah, Indian Rosewood back inside.
God, that sounds great. That's that line, also. It's a very cool line that you're doing in there. And the counterpoint, and everything's clear.
Great reverb, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that sounds that's pretty amazing. But yeah, and that guitar was that Carlos won. Well, that speaks for itself. I mean, that's just amazing sound. That thing, that pickup is just the killer thing.
I was very, very sad to give that guitar back to that guy. I didn't want to give it back.
But I have to admit, your Guild sounds pretty.
Yeah.
That's what I told him. I said, he goes, I don't like that. I need to get a good acoustic steel string. I said, that's how you mean.
No, those are good guitars.
No, the Guild sounds nice. It's just a little bit, I don't know, it's a little harsher sounding. The Martin had a bit more silky tone to it.
Yeah, well, a Martin's a Martin.
Yeah,
I mean, the Guild had its function. How old is your Guild?
It's a 76, I believe.
So that's a pretty good. It's aged pretty well.
Yeah, so it's definitely good.
That's just a great sound. Now, one other thing. Oh, let's talk a little bit about what you guys are going to be doing. Let's give a little preview of. Of the set that you guys are going to be doing, because you're integrating some of your songs, and then also Jim's doing some of yours.
Yeah,
so tell us a little.
Really quick, the fun thing is that I have these songs that are on Encantado, and they were written, the full ensemble, like bass and percussion and violin and all this stuff, just a lot of stuff. And now we have to do them as two guitars. And I'm like, the way I would, the lazy Jim is, hey, strum chords, and then I'll play melody, and then I strum chords, and you play a melody, and then you take a solo, and I'll strum chords. And Eric's like, no. So Eric comes back, he does these 3-4 hour gigs, and he goes to bed at like 4 a.m, in Florida. So he's like, oh yeah, after I got back from my 4 hour gig, I rearranged, Cielo Azul, one of my tunes. And it's like all interlocking parts, and he sends me a chart, and it's like overnight, it's like, oh, hey, I'm thinking on Across the Burning Sands instead of strumming chords. Check this out. And he's doing this crazy Al Di Meola cross picking, super intricate. And I'm like, okay, well, you're writing your parts if you want to do it, So anyway, what else, if you want to add anything, but yeah, so we had made it work for ourselves.
Well, it's real quick because we're almost out of time, but real quick, you were talking about one of the things you liked was his way of using arpeggiated figures. Grab your guitar real quick and just to demonstrate what you're taught, how you approach that, because you do some interesting things and you do, it is a different style.
You're going to actually want me to play something I wrote, okay? Those parts are tough, man. well, I'll play some parts from Glistening. Let's see.
drop D tuning, right?
Sometimes I play it without the drop T. And to be honest, I don't play these parts when I perform, so I don't,
right, no, no,
I don't
just to give us a, I'm not trying to put you on the spot,
okay,
just to show a little bit of that, what you're doing there, so they get an idea, because I think that's something that guitarists should look at, you know.
Underneath or over that is.
Yeah.
But that's a lot of those tunes were written that way. What happens is that, you know, in the old days, I would buy some samples and have some drum grooves and put them on and improvise over them and have a tune. Well, I ran out of stuff. I didn't have anything else to write to, so I started getting into just writing more arpeggiated parts and then adding melody to them later. And that's how the writing evolved on this album. And, you know, I think that's kind of how Al Di Meola writes as well. And I'm like, this is a really good way.
Well, I think it's an interesting and it's a refreshing way of harmonically. I mean, yes, the as Jim calls it, his lazy Jim thing of just strumming. But actually, it gets interesting. And then you have something to counterpoint against.
Yeah, and like Lisa Carbe from Incendio had pointed out that we did do a lot of like kind of arpeggiated arrangements for our Vihuela CD. It was a guitar trio CD.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was really intrigued by, you know, how he would have like a 6-minute tune where it's a guitar and a tune, and the only time you heard any strumming at all would be under a lead, like a solo section. But a lot of the song was just interlocking arpeggios, and it opened up the field of the stereo field for all other kinds of stuff I could hear, tom fills and bass fills, because you don't have that strumming in there.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that until you pointed it out, that there's very little strumming on this album. It just didn't occur to me until Jim had mentioned it. So. But yeah, the guitars, because they're so layered and so busy in their arpeggios, right, they tend to be almost like pads underneath, right?
Right, and I noticed that you didn't use a lot. There's, I think, one song where you actually have like an actual pad.
Yeah, just
everything
kind
else,
of a little bit.
And it's full. And the arpeggios through the reverb, it gives that harmonic support.
Yeah,
and it sounds full. You
it's
know
tough
what I mean?
To mix, though. The glistening tune, I probably re-recorded 3 times and remixed it until I got it where you could at least hear the arpeggios enough with the melody, and you could appreciate both.
But. Well, we're out of time, and there's a piece I want to play at the end before I get into that real quick. The name of the album is Glistening, and it's available everywhere now, I think.
Yep.
And I recommend it. It's really a ear-opening experience. There's some really cool things happening. You can look up more about Eric at www.ericguitar.com. And then also Dan, www.dansistos.com, and his new album, Ventura Boulevard, great album, has the flamenco, the classical, and the jazz. And he does a lot of really cool stuff. Check that out. And then Jim, www.guitaraexotica.com, and his last album was Encantado. And check that out. Another great album. A lot of some interesting stuff and very, I love the prog influence. I love you guys doing the prog stuff. So anyway, check out all that stuff. And then again, Thursday at the
Coffee Gallery backstage in Altadena at 8 p.m.
Yes, you'll see these two guys just do their thing, and it's an amazing sound.
In fact, I think the last song, without giving it away, we're going to play it.
Yes. Well, that's another thing. To close the show, I wanted to play this clip because I've had, like, JP and Lisa, when they came on with Carpe Duran, they did a song, and it kind of shows your influences. They did a song with an Aussie song on their last album, their new album, and A Bridge Between, if I'm correct. And when we had Ben Woods on, he did a whole thing with Metallica and a Judas Priest thing. Well, I have to admit, this was really when I saw this, I'm like, I got to listen to this and see what's happening. I cut this piece together. It's a lot longer, and he does the full song, but this is a classical version of Stairway to Heaven. So I'm going to leave everybody with this. If there's anything you want to mention about this before we, because there's a violin on it. Is it violin or viola on there?
I can't tell you what it is.
Yeah,
it's not a human being.
Oh, okay.
It's programmed.
Oh, okay, but it sounds great. Anyway, this is a very cool thing. I cut the 3 main sections, so see how it develops. But you got to really listen. It really deserves to be listened in its entirety. So I recommend getting Glistening and just take a listen. The whole album's just great. It's great to have you on the show, Eric. Thank you so much, and I look forward to having you come back. You got to come back to California a lot more often.
Well, that's very doable. We're going to do it, man.
Right, very cool. And then, Dan, it's always great to see you. And
thank you so much for
Jim,
having me.
It's awesome.
Thank you.
So, everybody, have a great night. Here's Stairway to Heaven.